From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in early 2013. A commercial photographer named Trent Bell could have been any of us. Like Bell, we all have friends in various backgrounds. We've got friends with small and large families, friends with interesting careers or boring careers. But what would you do if you found out someone you'd known for a long time, one of your friends, had been sentenced to 36 years in prison? In Trent Bell's case, his friend was well-educated, employed, married, with four children. Now his friend was heading to prison for what could be the rest of his life. Bell wanted to do something with his camera. His work primarily focuses on architectural photography in publications such as the New York Times. But this time, he wanted to get personal. He asked inmates to write letters to their younger selves, then took portrait photographs of the inmates. He placed the images of the inmates over their own handwritten letters, and the result has gone viral. The Reflect Project has been covered around the world, and today we're honored to have Trent Bell join us. Trent, good afternoon.
Afternoon. Thank you for having me on.
And thanks for taking the time. First of all, I imagine you had no idea when you started the Reflect Project that it would take your work around the world.
No. When we started out, it just came from an experience that I had had of what had happened to a friend of mine, and we basically just sat down to create a self-assignment, something we wanted to do to just keep our creative interest and everything in my business and what we were doing, and it turned out to be quite a project that I don't think was by accident, but I'm the kind of person who does things more so by feeling, and then after the fact can kind of reflect on them and see where it came from and why we did it, and we're very happy with how it's turned out. We're very happy with how much it's affected people. So it's really great.
This is one of those hours where if our listeners are listening at home or on your computer at work or somewhere, you really want to pull up Trent's work and take a look at it. Trent, tell people where they can look where they can take a look at the Reflect Project.
You can see it one of three places. First of all, we should have a website live right now that's just reflectproject.com. Or you can see it on my website, trentbell.com. It's under the Reflect Project under my galleries. And then if you go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thereflectprojectsite.com, you can see it there. I know the easiest and most effective way right now is just through my website, trentbell.com. We're just finishing up a dedicated website to the Reflect Project, and I believe it's live, but I'm not 100% sure. So in actuality, this whole thing has really kind of taken us by storm. It, we didn't expect it to blow up so quickly, which is great, but we're playing a little bit of catch up right now and trying to move forward at the same time. So
we're talking to Trent Bell, a photographer who has put together a project in which he asked prison inmates, longtime prison inmates, to write letters to their younger selves. We're going to be reading from some of those letters throughout the hour here, and you're going to get a sense of just how gripping and moving some of these were. But I want to kind of take us through the process first here, because you can't just walk into a prison, especially with potentially violent offenders and violent convicts with long time in prison. You can't just walk in and sit down for an interview. You can't just walk in and say, "Here, write me a letter." So, Trent, take us through the process. How did you go about doing that?
Well, after we, my studio manager and I, Tim Holt, we sat down together, came up with this idea. I then just basically put together an email, kind of sending it to the prison to whoever's kind of the general inquiry there.
And which prison, by the way?
Is Maine State Prison.
Maine State Prison.
Actually, this is the prison that Shawshank Redemption was filmed around, was the Maine State Prison in Thomaston. That prison is no longer standing. They've moved to a new prison, but the Maine State Prison, anyway. Side note of interest there. But, yeah, we put together kind of a mock-up of what we wanted to do and then just presented it to, the people at the prison that, take initial inquiries. They had just hired a PR person who saw the value in what we were trying to do. They looked through our website and saw, all right, they can, put together some good work. We think this would be a great thing for the prison. and that connected us with Martha Boynton, who's a social worker there at the prison, who really believed in the project and put us out there in front of the bureaucracy of the prison and said, hey, this is going to be a great thing. Let's make it happen. She opened all the doors for us. And, you know, she connected us with the men through her, and offered our project up to the inmates that were eligible to work with stuff like this, and made it happen that way. And it was funny because right at the start, my studio manager kind of said, this is going to be a really difficult thing to make happen. I just don't think we're going to be able to get prison to, you know, sign off on something like this. And for some reason, I just kind of thought, like, no, they're going to be all over this. It's going to be great. We're trying to do something here that has a lot of meaning and a lot of, you know, a lot of value to it. And I think they'll see that. And I think they'll see it done in respect and in safety, protecting victims and everything else. And it all came together.
And when you read the letters that they wrote to themselves, we're talking about prison inmates who have a variety, sort of a varied history. Some, there's a sex offender in there. Others have talked about violence. They've talked about drugs and alcohol, selling drugs and other things. How many total inmates did you end up taking photographs of and including in the project?
Just 12 so far. And the interesting thing, we thought that, us not having any experience with prison, we kind of thought, if there's anything that could get me out of those walls in any way, shape, or form, just mentally to break up the routine and everything else, I'd be all over it. And so I thought that when we offered this project up and it got approved, that we would have to, filter out, because there's just so much work that we can actually do while maintaining our normal business to actually do. So we thought, we'd at least get like 100 to 200 people that were like, yeah, we'll do this, and then we'd have to somehow sift through them, which in hindsight now, how on earth could you sift through these people's stories
right.
and devalue some of them and everything else? So I'm glad we didn't have to. But these are the only 12 men that came forward that actually wanted to participate in this project. And we later kind of found out that, prison inmates, after having gone through the process of doing some type of crime, hurting other people, creating loss, creating pain, then also, being caught, convicted, gone through the whole process, being in prison, and then dealing with their own loss and their own loss of freedom and life that they had, and then being put into that prison environment where it is so, acidic, caustic, terrible environment the prison is, they really have to harden themselves emotionally. And I think in many cases just withdraw into themselves to protect themselves and to make it through what is now happening to them. And, most of the guys just did not want to, cut their sternum open and just open themselves up to say, they really, most of these guys, I think they just want to protect themselves, keep their head down, do their time. And for these guys to step forward and say, all right, I will share what I did wrong, what is very embarrassing, what is shameful to my family. I will step out in courage and say, this is what I did, but this is what I've learned from it. And I think they all saw the value in the project of being able to create that circumstance and that portrait and everything else of, hopefully creating something that is of meaning to someone else as either a warning or just an inspiration. Something that creates in a person a desire to make their lives a little better, being thankful for what they do have or the family that they had that helped them, steer away from things like that. So, again, very, very interesting project.
Yeah, 263-WXXI, 263-9994, TrentBell.com. Go to the website and check out the Reflect Project as we talk about some of these. And Trent, if you don't mind, I'd like to read, and some of the letters are shorter than others, some are longer, but I've chosen a few. And if you don't mind, I'd like to read some of them, even with a little bit of length, and we can talk about what we feel when we hear that, because I was so moved by that. And so I hope that would be okay.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, so this first one is from an inmate named Wes. And he's, again, in this Reflect project that Trent Bell and his studio created, they asked inmates to write letters to their younger selves. Here's what Wes wrote. Dear Wes, I'm reaching out to you today, and I pray that the words of my heart are encouraging enough to stop you from making bad choices that could change your life forever. Spending your life in prison is no fun at all. You lose your freedom, and people in time forget where you are. It becomes a lonely world in a very short time. There is so much more to life than drugs and alcohol, and a life of crime doesn't pay. Wes, I have seen and done it all, and 20 years later, I am still in prison, paying for bad choices I made in life. Don't be like I was. You can be better than me and avoid the prison systems. You have the opportunity to succeed in life if you follow your parents' advice. I was a runaway and rebelled against everything I was told to do. Tough love is what it's all about, and when we think we can do things on our own, that's when we fail. You don't want to grow up behind prison walls, throwing your life away as I did. You have choices in life, and if you reach out to people who really love and care about you, I promise you, you won't be a failure as I was. I made many bad choices, and I always ask myself the question, what if? Number one, what if I had stayed in school? Number two, what if I had chosen better friends? Number three, what if I had said no to booze and drugs? Number four, what if I had listened to my parents? Ask yourself, what is it you want for your life? What makes you happy? Whatever that happiness may be, I promise you it's much better than being locked up in prison, a world filled with loneliness and darkness from being away from loved ones. Wes, I believe in you. My advice for you is to stay in school, follow your dreams, and everything else will take care of itself. Trent, when you hear that letter, what do you think?
I've met Wes's wife. He's actually gotten married since he's been in prison, and I've learned more of his story. And I've spent a lot of time looking at him, and viewing his video interview that he's done, and the time I spent with him in prison. It's hard to see someone who, at the core has become maybe, a very good person, but through this one, moment in their life became who he was, a convict in prison for quite a long time. And it's a feeling of loss and sadness and not just for him. These guys, the utmost importance in this project, as guidance from the prison system to us and this project, was to leave all reference of victims or anything out. That can't be in there because of protection for victims' rights and everything else. And so these men have steered away in any way, shape, or form of really referencing specifically their crimes or anything else. And I know a lot of these guys carry a lot of weight for what they did and the loss that they created, but at the same time we can only focus on their situation, and it is one of a lot of loss and everything else. West actually went in with his brother. Whatever had happened with him happened with his brother, and from what I know, it was someone had died, and I don't know if it was a direct action of them or manslaughter or whatever. If it was not exactly sure of the crime, but it's just a it's just so hard to see someone, expressing that loss and regret and everything else, but just being stuck there. And it was interesting. I was writing back to another interview this morning about the project, and in separating out the words or just the portrait or, the told story, it's hard to get the full effect of what viewing the images now actually does. And I hope anyone listening can actually go to the website and see these and read them at the same time, because there's this dichotomy, maybe is the right word, I'm not sure. Yeah. Not an English major, but you see the person, you then hear them in your head, you see their handwriting, and you absorb their personality through the curvature of their letters and everything else, the cadence of their sentences and everything else. It's in your head. But you're actually eavesdropping at that point on, their thoughts to themselves. And it's this whole moment of something that I've never experienced as far as the power of combining words and imagery so tightly knit together. And you feel it through their eyes when you look at the portrait. And then you can kind of at the same time get lost in their letter and come out of it and step back and then look at them and see them in their prison state. It's a very emotional thing. Yeah, to hear the letter is just, it's sad to hear the loss and to just see that situation.
We're talking to Trent Bell, 263 WXXI, 263-9994. Bernard is first up. Go ahead, Bernard.
Yeah, thank you very much. I was very interested that a prison has a public relations person. That seems kind of bizarre to me. I guess what the purpose is on my mind. But my real question is, given the size of the prison system in the United States, I'd be interested in whether or not this gentleman seems to think that, A, it's working, and, B, if I just had 36 years to sit around in a cell, I could write a really good letter. So how sincere or manipulative does he believe these people really are? I think this is a very interesting project because it opens up this whole idea of, given the money, time, and number of people involved, is the prison system really working, and should we reconsider it? Thanks very much for this show.
Yeah, thanks, Bernard. Thanks for the call. Trent, you want to tackle those one by one?
Yeah, the two things that stood out to me before I forget, I'm notorious for losing my train of thought right in the middle of it. But there's the how sincere are these guys?
Yeah, why don't you start? I'll revisit his points, but let's start there because Bernard's point is that, you know, hey, these guys are convicted of felony and a lot of them violent crimes. Do we trust that they are remorseful or sincere?
Right. So our involvement, our intentional involvement was very, very minimal within what they gave us. We said, write a one-page letter to your pre-incarcerated self. That's it. And it's going to be put around a portrait of you. That was intentional to not really give any guidance beyond that. We wanted to see what they came up with. And if you take some time and read each one of them, what is an added dimension is the ability to read between the lines with this. And some of them are very sincere. You can pick up on that. Others of them are a little bit more in the process of coming to terms with what they did, maybe, and accepting their part of the guilt or their, you know, blame or their situation due to their consequences from what they did, their actions. And it's a very interesting thing to see where their crimes came from when you there's also an online video by Joe Carter that he came with us and did a video interview of each of these guys. It's a 14-minute interview. You can find it on YouTube if you just search Joe Carter Reflect on YouTube. It'll come right up. The sincerity was not our concern. Our concern was to get a picture of them in where they were at. So some of them, I believe, are very sincere. Others are still in the process of maybe getting to the point of being, you know, broken down to the point of accepting things.
Yeah, and kind of owning it. Right. Yeah, and we're going to read some more of the letters, but you can see some of them really, really own it and hurt.
Yeah.
For what they did. And some of them are a little more broadly speaking, and as Trent says, maybe in the process. But Trent, Bernard is also asking, you got a close look at the prison system, and maybe it was not a time in your life when you expected to get that look, and did it change the way you view the prison system? Do you think it's working?
It has, through two things that have come through this project. One is a guy, I believe if I'm remembering right, his name's Tony Guerrera, I believe, and he was imprisoned in the Minnesota State Prison for a while, and he wrote a book, which is available on Amazon, and I hope a bunch of people buy it because he deserves it, and, you know. But he was in the prison system for a long time, and he wrote a book called How to Stay Out of Prison, and it's directed towards other inmates that have been in prison and how to stay out of prison once they're out, because he knows all too well the, you know, lack of advantages or ability to, work a normal job, get ahead. All the doors close on you when you have the reputation of, you know, convict. And it's a really good read, especially for people who have come from that, background of having gone through prison. And the Minnesota State Prison System, I heard a NPR report on the Minnesota State Prison System, and there's something that they do in their interactions with prisoners that's intentional that gives a feeling of more respect, and in turn the inmates feel that and adjust their actions and their reactions and everything else. And Minnesota, I think, has one of the lowest recidivism rates because of their prison system. And I'm wondering why more states don't do this or catch on to it. I don't know. The privatization of the prison system might not be really in the best interest to get criminals to get out of prison and not come back. You want a returning customer. So I don't know. But the second thing that I've seen through this has been Brandon, who is one of the inmates. He comes from a very supportive family. All of his family is behind him. They all go up and visit him each week. He committed a crime that was a very reactionary thing, and as far as I can tell, the only thing he ever did illegal. And he got, I think, 17 years for it. And it was just this, you know, one thing. But, you know, his father said he went into prison, essentially a cocky little punk, and having arrived at prison has come to the realization and has kind of become a man, accepted what he did, his part in it, his blame and everything else, and has bettered himself and has made it his, you know, his vision right now for himself is to make it his life work to help other people in his situation or prevent other people from getting into his situation. Go ahead.
Yeah, Trent, I just want to jump in because I've got a chunk of Brandon's letter, and if you wouldn't mind, I think it's a perfect time to kind of read from it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because, you know, this is a man who, again, TrentBell.com to see the Reflect Project, and it's so much more powerful when you see the images with it. I'm amazed just to see the difference in handwriting. One of the inmates had some of the best handwriting I'd ever seen.
Khalil.
Yeah, Khalil was just amazing stuff. But here's what Brandon wrote to himself. Brandon wrote, Brandon, it hurts to be sitting here writing you this letter. Our journey has been tough, filled with pain, tears, and heartache. I made a lot of mistakes. I write this letter now in order to caution you to let me about the road ahead if you don't open your eyes, and also to tell you what has become important in life as a result of where I've been. The year is 2013, and you've been in prison for 4 years now. The specifics of how and why aren't what's important now. There is a bigger picture. You got here because of ignorance, because of the mindset, and because you are trying to be someone you are not. Just know that people always try and test you, and no matter what you think, only a real man can walk away. Anyone can fight. The weakest people can fight. Anyone can act or react with violence, but a real man can turn the other cheek and walk away. Things are going to happen that will make you bitter with those closest to you. You have to be a bigger person and confront your problems and talk them out. It's exactly, Trent, what you are saying is he sounds to be describing a moment that changed his life forever and just wishing you could go back and be smarter in that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And, to see the change that's happened in him, and just through interviewing his family members after the fact of this whole project, I see where he had the base. He had that seed planted in him. But through, you know, all of us growing up are just kids, you know. There's hormones raging and everything else, and you don't really have the benefit of experience, and you just kind of wing it in so many situations. And that happened with him. And, you know, now that he's, you know, committed that crime and punished it, he's been put in a place where he has to find what's truly him, what's gonna come out of this. And I think his upbringing and the values that his parents instilled in him at a younger age and everything else are now coming out now that he has to revert back to, you know, who am I really?
Yep.
You know, and now, that being said, he has the benefit of that good family upbringing and everything else. And he has taken advantage, and this comes back to the initial caller's question of, you know, the prison system and what it's got for us. He's taken, in my opinion, and from what I've seen, he's taken every advantage he has to better himself. He's gotten, I believe he's gotten his college degree through something that I think it was Warren Buffett's sister or wife, I'm not sure, has been part of an initiative to offer education for inmates so, you know, when they come out, they have something to stand on. And, you know, he's taken advantage of that. You know, you can tell he's reading and educating himself in prison. He's really being proactive in making the choice to be a better person. And so, and these opportunities are available to them, you know, but you can't force these opportunities down their throats. So, you know, to me, the real question is, how do we create that impetus of, you know, wanting to change? Because it seems like all the opportunities for the inmates are there if they want them. You know, if we can, you know, inspire them to become these better people. And, you know, a lot of the thing that got these guys in prison was the feeling of, I don't have any other choices. These are my only options.
Right.
You know, the family I come from, the amount of, you know, resources that we currently have don't allow me to get ahead and to have all these, you know, material things that I see on TV and what everyone else has. So I'm gonna take the shortcut. I'm gonna take a risk, and I'm gonna get it. And so, you know, that's, you know, I'm where I'm at because I've stood on the shoulders of my parents who gave me a good upbringing. I started my business because my wife supported us for, you know, 5 to 7 years while I was bringing no money home. You know, I have so many people to thank for where I'm at and what I'm able to do. And a lot of those guys had less opportunities, less, you know, people's shoulders to stand on. And a lot of terrible things probably happened to these guys when they were younger that, you know, set them down the wrong course. And so it's such a complex problem, but I still think that the opportunities in the prison system seem to be there. It's more so, you know, what can we do to inspire these guys to take those opportunities and make that choice? And that comes back to the Minnesota prison system that seems to have been able to inspire these guys to say, yes, I can be that contributing member of society and be accepted and have that pride in myself to do what, you know, needs to be done within the law to, you know, be a better person and to fit in and achieve and make a life for myself.
Well, New York State right now is debating whether or not they want to invest state resources in offering education for prison inmates if they stay on good behavior and essentially want it and qualify for it. And that's one of the hot issues in this state right now. So we'll see how that goes. We're talking to Trent Bell, who is a photographer who created the Reflect Project. TrentBell.com to check it out. You ought to do it right now while we're talking about it because it's some really stirring images of longtime prison inmates who wrote letters to their younger selves about essentially how to avoid the mistakes they've made. I want to bring Dale Davis into this conversation. Ms. Davis is the executive director of the New York State Literary Center, and she understands this kind of project quite well. Dale, what did you think when you heard about the Reflect Project?
I liked it very much. I've referenced it on our website when I first heard about it because I think it's very important for the inmates to have a voice.
And give me a sense, Dale, for what some of what the New York State Literary Center does. It's not exactly the same as what Trent did, but I know you've thought about these matters a lot.
Yes, we don't work at a prison. We work at Monroe County Jail and Monroe Correctional Facility. Primarily, our goals are literacy is embedded in everything. We work on community belonging, and the narrative of inmates are having the control of the narrative of their own lives. We use the arts. We integrate the arts into everything we do.
Dale, when you see the Reflect Project that's gone viral, do you get the sense that, yes, it's a dozen men in Maine, but this project could grow to other places? And we're going to ask Trent that same question, but what do you think, Dale? Can we see this grow to other places in other states?
I'm not certain about that. I mean, one of our goals in the project is to make our inmates human in their own eyes, to make them feel that they're part of Rochester and that all the rhetoric is meant for them and they're wanted in this country and in their own city. That came from a quote which we used this week in class, Where Are People of Color in Children's Books? It was the New York Times' Walter Dean Myers wrote the article. Right now we're working we're studying the Community Foundation report, the analysis on poverty in the Rochester area. We're talking about rock hunger and trying to have the inmates look closely at some of the points and in that report and how it relates to them and how it relates to their community. We work with many inmates. I think in the class on Monday there were about 5 out of 12 who have been homeless at one point in their lives. That's directly in our community. We have mental illness. We have an educational system that hasn't worked for them. And one young man, Markeith, wrote on Monday, he handed in a beautiful illustration and wrote, "Look deep into the jail and tell me what do you see. Look into my eyes and tell me what do you see. A man lost in a cold world, surrounded by a lost nation."
Wow.
Yeah.
And another young man handed this in, "I'm hungry for a better life in a place where I am wanted and my city is not blind to me."
Dale, before we let you go there, I don't even know what to say to that. I think Trent sounds like you feel the same. Trent, you want to react to that real briefly?
Well, there's two. The one thing that stands out is the inmates having a voice and then also feeling wanted by their community. I think that's an extremely important point. The first reaction to that is the inmates having a voice. Obviously, they cannot have a voice in the public unless they're at a point where they can safely do that, where they're at a point where they have, accepted their situation and it's safe to allow them to have a voice in the community. So I think there's a kind of a first step within the prison of helping bring those men to that point. And then there's a second step of taking these men and in a safe environment, in a safe situation, giving them the ability to share their wisdom from their terrible mistakes, which we all do. We learn from our mistakes. That's huge. So there needs to be a position that these men can share from the position of a terrible mistake, sharing wisdom to give back to the community, to help correct the community and help guide the community. That, in turn, puts that feeling back onto the prisoners of, yes, you are important. Even though you're important because of your wisdom that is from a mistake you made, you're still important. We all make mistakes, and that's how we learn. So.
We have a listener question online, and Dale, I'd like you to kind of jump in on this point as well here. Just asking Trent to clarify, and Trent I know is not, Trent's a photographer, he's not a correctional facility expert, but you said you've looked around and you look at recidivism and you like, or at least, I say you like, or at least you respect what you're seeing in Minnesota. Recidivism is generally lower, and you described, our listener's asking you to describe in a little bit more detail, what is truly different about the system? You kind of described it as more of a system of respecting the inmates and trying to get them to change the culture. Can you speak a little bit more about that?
I would have to ask anyone who's interested in that to Google search the NPR report on it. I don't have the specifics on it, and I heard the report probably 3 to 4 years ago.
Okay.
But I remember having an impact on me in that, that was the gist of it, that they, in a safe way, obviously give these guys, as they grow, a lot more freedom, a lot more respect, but also the interactions of the guards with the inmates, every point of interaction was done with more respect and more implied respect both ways. And it I don't know what percentage it is of what's caught and what's taught, but in a way they were acting out how they wanted the prisoner's inmate without, trying to tell them, which is the way that, people learn and absorb more so.
Yeah.
And I think that was the gist of that NPR report.
So a conscious culture change there. Dale, last...
I'd comment.
Yeah, please.
We partner with the Office of the Sheriff. In fact, the Sheriff's Office deputies and administrators have been very important tutors in our work. And again, have made it possible. Without them, we could not have done it. And also the New York State Council on the Arts. I want to read something else on Inmate Row, and we have all kinds of resources on the website. The New York State Literary Center is very active in the National Prison Arts Coalition, which has all kinds of art from Buzz Alexander's work at the University of Michigan, the visual art paintings of the inmates. Nationally, this is a big movement. This is what we have on our website, Narrative of Our Life and Times. We did it last year. I worked with visual artist Juliana Munez on it. And we were looking at Frederick Douglass as this being our city and asking the inmates to write on different parts of the city. And this was something on Clifford Avenue. And again, I think when you work with the inmates, where do you have time to grieve? I didn't believe it when they shot you, my brother. I hoped it was just a dream and you would come back on Clinton and I would see you on the block. You were only out for a couple of months, and your life was taken. Now I'm going through the same stuff, and I don't know what to do. It seems like all of my options are dead ends. Where's hope? Why do I have to wake up in a cell for trying to feed my child? Why do I have to live in the hood? Why do I have no options to make it? Why was my brother's life taken? Again, we try to have the community of Rochester, the greater Rochester community, see who is in jail.
Dale, thanks for taking the time. I know it's a busy day for you. Thanks for joining
us. Thank you.
Dale is take care, Dale. Dale is the executive director of the New York State Literary Center. We are way over late for the shortest break in radio. We're going to take a break that's roughly the length of an extended sneeze, and then we're going to come back here with Trent Bell for a few more minutes here as we talk about the Reflect Project. Trent's a photographer who asked prison inmates to write letters to their younger selves. The results are remarkable. You can check him out on TrentBell.com. Much more with him after this very short break on member-supported public radio.
Documentary lovers take note. The critically acclaimed documentary Tim's Vermeer opens this week at The Little. The film follows Tim Jennison, a Texas-based inventor who attempts to solve one of the greatest mysteries in all of art. How did 17th century Dutch master Johannes Vermeer manage to create a painting strikingly similar to photographs 150 years before the invention of photography? The epic research project Jennison embarks on to test his theory is as extraordinary as what he discovers. Learn more at thelittle.org.
Welcome back to Connections on this Thursday afternoon. Trent Bell's on the phone with us. He created the Reflect Project, and Trent told us earlier in the hour that when he asked longtime prison inmates to write letters to their younger selves and then to pose for portrait photographs, which he would superimpose over their handwritten letters, he at first thought, well, he could have 100 people who'd want to sign up for it, and only a dozen men did. What has changed since then, though, is that this project has gone viral. It's been covered in Australia, the United Kingdom, across this country. And so, Trent, I wonder, are other systems or anyone else calling you saying, bring that work here?
It's been a very interesting reaction from the world. Individuals have been incredibly drawn to it and affected by it. I had an email from a young lady in Tennessee, I think in her 20s, that had the most eloquent letter that kind of spoke about how the project inspired her to remain soft, to remain looking for, you know, to keep looking for the beauty in things, to keep yourself from getting too jaded or too, hardened. And it really inspired her to be that better person and everything else, which, you know, I thought was very remarkable. And there's been this incredible reception of the project from individuals, but there's really been very little interest from any galleries to actually feature the work. Now, my thought on that is that, we had it in Engine Gallery, which is a grant-funded gallery, community-based thing, which they don't have to rely as much on the art that they sell to pay for things. And so it's just very interesting to me that this has been incredibly received by individuals, people, and social media and everything else, but there really hasn't been any request by galleries to bring it, please bring it here so we can show it. There's been a huge amount of requests from, you know, lawyers that work within penal systems to feature it just in their own offices and their waiting areas, and correctional officers wondering if there's ways that it could come and be shared that way. All of these are very, you know, unfunded ways of being able to even get it from point A to point B. But I think my thought on that is that it's just, these aren't really pieces that can be very easily resold. How many, you know, what percentage of the population is really going to want to put one of these in their home and look at it every day? It's a special person that's going to want that. It's the work is not as ambiguous and cannot leave a person ambiguously feeling one thing or the other, and there can't be a lot of theory behind it. It's very intentional and it's very direct, which kind of maybe undermines a lot of people's appreciation for art, where I see this and the people I'm working with see this as more, we're calling it archumentary. You know, it's taking documentation of someone's life and situation and emotions and feelings and overlaying our creative abilities over that and mixing them, which has been a very powerful social thing. So it's interesting just how the two aspects of the end users of this have reacted.
Trent Bell is a photographer who created the Reflect Project, which was an entirely new thing for him. You're used to architectural kind of photography, Trent, is sort of the background. Is that fair?
I'm trained as an architect and practiced for a few years, and then kind of switched into doing architectural photography because the creative restraints on starting out as an architect are very difficult due to the fact of having to get people to invest hundreds of thousands, if not millions, into even being able to produce a portfolio, whereas architecture is a lot more free, or photography is a lot more free-form and able to create what you would create on your own dime and sweat equity.
And so if you're just joining us this afternoon, Trent went through the situation in which a friend of his, A father of four, a married guy, educated, working, was sentenced to 36 years in prison. And Trent kind of looked inward and said, boy, is any of us capable of a moment of a mistake that could lead to that? And what would life be like? And so went to the Maine State Prison, and a dozen men who'd been serving long terms there agreed to write letters to their younger selves and pose for Trent's photographs and portraits. And he put them together in the Reflect Project. I want to read another one of the letters, because when you see the final results, everyone's handwriting is so different, and you actually see different personality in different handwriting. You know, as Trent said earlier in the hour, you almost hear their voices talking to you. And the most demonstrative handwriting I saw was in the man who called himself, wrote a letter to Ken, and he wrote to Ken the Younger. Here's what he wrote to himself. Look what you've done to us, our sons, and the future destroyed. All of our life, you never took a bit of advice or warnings from anyone. Anyone that had the good look of where we were heading, which was down many a wrong path. From where I sit in prison at the age of 50, I know we didn't think we'd see 30. So many disastrous mistakes. Drugs, alcohol, sex, online dating sites, cyber sex, Yahoo chat rooms, all addictions that ruined our life. So many people you hurt along the way, dating back to 1982. Mom and dad, brothers, sisters, sons, wife and ex-wife, stepdaughter, more than a handful of long-term girlfriends, mother-in-law, and on and on. There were credit cards, bailouts from mom and dad, a wasted college education. How many jobs have you had? How many jobs and relationships, for that matter, lasted longer than 5 years? None. Not a one. Remember your 1987 Dodge Ram Charger? What a mess that was. 1991 Chapter 7 bankruptcy? Your brief marriage? Man, now as a convicted sex offender, we'll never teach again. You worked hard for so many years. Gone. Our autistic sons, you'll never see them again. Remember how hard you worked to rescue them from their mom? And then she died 1.5 years in family court, only to lose them? You killed your future and your life, Ken. Do yourself a favor. Listen to those who love you and get their wisdom and understanding. They want to save you from yourself. Wow. And not only the words, Trent, but isn't his handwriting even more demonstrative?
Yeah. His by far, he's underlined and gone over certain words like 10 times. You can just see when you actually hold the letter in your hand, you could flip it over and read it. It's like pressed in there so hard. And that one was the most graphically just wow. There's a lot of angst towards himself and his situation and everything in there. It is a very, very gripping thing to view, is it just his handwriting alone. And then you read the subject matter of it, and it just underscores it even more.
We have a listener listening online who wants to know, Trent, what did the inmates think when they saw the final results?
I have not actually spoken directly with the inmates. We're in the process of doing a documentary and hope to eventually take that documentary back to them, and that'll be the first time we'll have been able to directly interact with them. But I've spoken with a couple of them on the phone, and through family members have, you know, spoken with them. I received a letter from one of them, but they're all very, very appreciative, and I think this goes back to the gentleman that was speaking with us earlier about that feeling of fitting in and even wanted by your community. And I think they really appreciated the ability to share, even if it's this painful way of, all right, here, I messed up, but this is what I've learned. Even in that situation, they've been incredibly thankful, and they every time I've had any interaction with them, they've just kept going on and on about, you know, thank you so much for doing this. It's been a great process for us to just go through the difficulty of writing this letter, but to just give us this voice of, you know, apology but wisdom at the same time. They've all been very, very thankful for it.
And, probably cathartic.
Yes. Yeah.
So Trent created this project, and if you're joining us late in the hour, TrentBell.com to check out the Reflect project, as you really should. Trent talked earlier in this hour about our prison system in general, and I think what's so remarkable about this project is, for some people, you'll read the letter, and hopefully we will have our younger population, our at-risk population, see this kind of project and think about what these inmates are saying. Think about what they're saying about the mistakes they made and how to avoid them. There will be others who see this work from Trent and say, what can we learn about the prison system in general? And Trent talked about the importance of, not all of these men will be there for the rest of their lives, and the question is, how do you make sure that we're giving them an opportunity, if they want it, to put themselves in position to lead productive lives? So Trent, I wonder, you worked with a dozen inmates. How many of those dozen, if they were released today, would you feel comfortable spending time with outside of the prison system?
I would feel comfortable spending time with each one of them outside of the prison system. Due to the nature of some of their offenses, obviously, I maybe wouldn't want a few of them babysitting my children. But, there's degrees of comfort. Brandon came across to me as the one who, that's me. He's on the same moral level and everything else. He just made one mistake. And I think the vast majority of those guys are going to have all intent and purpose in their lives to be better individuals once they get out.
Yeah. Trent, let me jump in, and I hate to do this, but only because our phones are all of a sudden blowing up again, which just means when we're so tight for time, I want to try to get through as much as we can. Jenna in Pittsford, go ahead.
My husband and I, Evan, had a friend who has since passed away, but he had spent 25 years behind bars. So clearly, although he would never discuss the details of his crime, he had done something bad. And he got out, and we used to call him John the Break Room Prison Consultant, and he spent his time out of prison making sure that other guys who got out never went back. He used to work with guys who got out, making sure that they were able to transition successfully into civilian life, because he said it was so hard. It was so hard to get a job and be normal and be accepted. But he made his way, and he was a phenomenal man, a really, really good man. No matter what he had done in the past, and we know it was bad, he was just a really good guy who made sure that the other guys who got out didn't go back.
Yeah, it's a beautiful story, and Jenna, thanks for the call there. Trent, I suppose you're not surprised to hear that.
No, and it directly relates to what I was saying earlier, almost to Tia. This gentleman, Tony, I think his name is Gut Berlay, if I'm saying it right, but he wrote a book on the same thing, and it seems to be his life mission right now, too, to do the same thing, to advise other inmates that have come out how to stay out of prison, because you are branded. You are in a position where you're so much going to have to prove yourself. And in his book, he goes on about how he had to work with a moving company for 3 years to prove himself. But anytime anything came up missing, whatever, they'd immediately come to him. Tony, you stole it,
Yeah.
No, I didn't. And then inevitably the people would find it and call back and say, no, we have it. But he had to just keep taking all of this on the chin endlessly. But you can see the resolving. He has it resolved, and he worked on it to not go back in.
Well, and to Trent's point there, there's a movement that says, you know, employers have to be able to ask if you've committed crimes, but there's a movement that says,
yep,
wait for the final round of interviews. Don't make it the top line on every application, because none of these guys will get jobs. That's a conversation,
yep,
for another day, but look what you've done, Trent. You've made us think about a lot, and I think that's a testament to the great work you've done. Thank you so much for taking the time for us today.
Thank you so much for having us on.
Trent Bell Photography, TrentBell.com. Check out the Reflect Project, and just really, really remarkable work. Short break, and the Dream Act and its possibility in New York State. Where does it stand? That is the next hour.